All right. It appears that we are recording now. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Alaikum, Namaste, Pak Sat Nam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lilat Hanya Wase Yake. Hello, may everything be well with you. I want to first of all welcome everyone back after about a week and a half of being off for the various holidays. I hope that everyone's holidays were as good as mine and my wife's and my sons and daughters and my grandchildren's were. They were wonderful. Got lots of rest, but also had lots of excitement, and we had truly a wonderful time during the last week and a half or so. So we hope that that same good fortune was visited upon you, my God, as it was upon us, and that you had a wonderful time as well. But that now you are ready, as we are, to come back to the study of God's Torah, the covenant that he gave to us on Mount Sinai through his servant, Eved Hashem, Moshe. Blessed be his memory. And we will return to our teaching. And before we do so, I will recite the Kaddish for the dead and for the mourners of the dead. So please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you were close who has died. By doing so, you'll honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yiskedal v'yishkedash smei rabo, bolmo dive ro kirase, v'amlik malkase, b'kaya konu v'yomakon, uv'kaya dekol beis Yisrael, ba'agalo uv'izman karyev, v'yimru amein. Yehe shmei rabo mavorak, le'olam le'olme omayo, yisparak v'yistavak, v'yisparar v'yisromam, v'yisnase v'yishadar v'yisale v'yishalal, Shmeidu kadjo beraku le'olo minko berkaso v'shoroso tush bekoso v'nakamoso da'amirom be'omo ve'imru omein. Yehe shlomo rabo min shamayo ve'kayim aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru omein. Ose shalom v'imrumov huyashe shalom aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru omein. Thank you very much. And now, because we are beginning a new topic today on the early books of mysticism, I will recite the blessing appropriate for beginning of new topics. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Ha'olam, Shehekiyanu Vekiyanu. Blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has granted us life, sustained us, and brought us to this season. Amen. Now, having finished being involved in giving a contextual background for Kabbalah, for learning Kabbalah, I spent quite a bit of time in teaching about Merkabah mysticism. And that brings us up to, well, it takes us from the period of about the first century before the modern era, Common Era, BCE, up until about the year 1000 in the Common Era, at which we begin to see the coming out into the open, the teaching of Kabbalah, which is different from Merkabah mysticism, both being forms of Jewish mysticism, one supplanting the other, Kabbalah supplanting the earlier form of Jewish mysticism, which is Merkabah mysticism, or chariot mysticism, palace mysticism, because of the reference to the halls through which one travels on a mystical journey, an ascent upward into the divine world of the mind of God. And so we come to the time of Kabbalah, which is around the year 1000 in the Common Era. And before I get into that, I want to teach a little bit, I want to give a short survey of the mystical texts which have been of primary source, a primary source for Kabbalah, and in fact all Jewish mysticism. And I'm going to give a survey of these, and of course I won't begin to touch on them all. I'm going to be touching just on a few of them, some of the major influential texts. And I'm going to do so in a certain order. We could pick many different bases for ordering these, but I'm going to order these chronologically in terms of going from those that were given to us, all of which, by the way, are given to us by God, but which were given to us or revealed to us first in the history of the world. And so I'll be giving them in order from first, from most ancient to the most recent. And just to let you know what these books are that I'll be discussing, I will be discussing them, these books, in the following order. The Sefer Torah, that's the book of instruction, the Torah. The Sefer HaRaziel, the Book of Enoch. The Book of Yehezkiel, that's in English, the Book of Ezekiel. And then the three classics of Kabbalah, the Sefer Yetzirah, the Sefer HaBahir, and the Sefer HaZohar. Now, the order in which I've mentioned these books, this will probably take us a couple of days, a couple of class sessions to discuss these, two, maybe three. But the order, as I mentioned, is in the order of the revelation from God, by God, to mankind, to the world. And so what we're going to begin with here is, and this comes as a surprise, surprising as it is to me, that this should be a surprise to anyone, but it comes as a surprise. I know I've been told by more than one person that I have included the Torah, Sefer HaTorah, which means literally book of instruction, book of the instruction, that I've included that as a mystical text. Well, it is. First and foremost, for the reason that it was written by God, it was created by God, and God itself is a mystery, hence mystical. Everything to do with God is mystical. Everything. And especially the Torah. Now, why do I say this? Am I just making this up? Is this my conclusion? Or did somebody tell it to me? I've been taught this, but not by any individuals. We're taught this by the Torah itself, or the Torah itself. The Sefer HaTorah, the Book of Instruction, and that's a very significant title for this book, was created or written by God and given to whom? Given to man, certainly, but even greater than that, given to the universe. The Torah is reshit. Reshit, that's a Hebrew word meaning commonly translated as beginning, and it's the name of the second of the ten holy sephirot. The second sephira is chokmah, wisdom, but it's also known as reshit. And if you remember from our earlier teachings, we taught that chokmah, wisdom, is the Torah. It's the primordial Torah. Primordial meaning coming before the earth, coming first in terms of number, first of everything. So that's why Torah means reshit. Well, that's one reason why it means reshit. It's because It is in connection with Reshit, which is the point of beginning of the creation of the world. Reshit means beginning. It's that tiny point from which can be likened to a spring of water, which wells out of the ground. And that stream that comes out of there gradually gathers in strength and volume and flows into a pool, which is binah, which is understanding. And this has to do with discrimination, discernment. And the two of those together then form the father and the mother, Abba and Ima. And they make son and daughter, or the world. Abba, it's no coincidence, by the way, that Abba, or Ab, father, and Ima, mother, both start with the letters Aleph. And they are Abba and Ima, mother and father, both start in Hebrew with the letter Aleph. And son and daughter, Ben and Bat, both start with the Hebrew letter Beit. So we have the first two letters of the Hebrew alphabet represented in the parents and the children. The parents of what? Abba and Ima are the parents of the world. They are the two sephirot which join together, and in their holy union they produce their offspring, which are all of the forms of life in the world and all of the rules and laws under which those life forms exist. And those are the children. And so in the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph comes first, representing father and mother, and Beit comes second, representing son and daughter, or sons and daughters. Okay, so as we've said, the Torah is Reshit. It is the first, even though it's the second sephira, the first being Keter, that represents king, and it is from the king, being God, also known as Ahaya, that all existence comes forth. But Ahaya cannot be considered a part of the world or a means by which the world is made. It is the source, but it's neither the means nor is it the world itself. That comes in the beginning, Reshit, which is Chokmah, wisdom, which is represented by the letter Beit, meaning two. So we have here a conundrum. We have not a dilemma, but we have a conundrum here. We have Reshit, meaning beginning, or first, or primary, being associated with the second sephira, associated with the letter Beit. But this is what I mean by mysteries, secrets, and mysticism. So the Torah, having come from God, is itself mystical in its nature because God is mystical. And we can never understand everything there is to know about God. We can't even begin to understand one little smidgen of the dust that could get into God's eye. That's how little we can hope to understand. But yet, from our perspective, that little is infinite. It is infinite. Infinitely large. Infinitely deep. And so, Sefer HaTorah is, in fact, the first mystical text. As I said, it is Reshit. And it's in the sense, not only of beginning, but more in the sense of first, or primary. And in the sense of being oldest and preeminent or highest of what? Of all the covenants and paths that God has made and laid out for us, made with us and laid out for us. Listen to this passage in which Chokmah, wisdom, which I've already equated with the Torah, the primordial Torah, speaks. So this is taken from Proverbs chapter 8, verse 22. The Lord created me at the beginning of his way, the first of his works of old. Now I'm going to just mention a couple of things here. In the Hebrew, we have here, it says, the Lord created me at the reshit of his derek. Derek. Reshit is beginning. Derek is way, as in two senses. One is in the path, and the second way sense is in the manner, in the way of his manner, or in the beginning of his manner, the way that God does things. So Torah is wisdom, and wisdom is the beginning of God's manner of doing things in the world. That means that everything that God does is based upon wisdom, divine wisdom. God does not make mistakes. God may, in fact, do things that he repents of later, like when he repents of making man and then destroys them with the flood. But that doesn't mean that the making of mankind was a mistake. The making of man was an intentional act, and it was based upon God's way, which itself is the way of wisdom. And so there's a purpose and a meaning and a wisdom to every single occurrence in the universe, every single event. God does not make mistakes, because God is perfection. God is completion. God is unity. God is one. So it says here, and we have here a voice speaking, the Lord created me, who? Wisdom. And who is wisdom? It's primordial Torah. The Lord created me at the reshit, the beginning of his manner or way or path, derek, the first of his works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, even before the earth. So here we're told that Torah existed before the earth existed, before creation. So this is before the second or third verse of Bereshit, the book of Genesis. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth, while as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. When he established the heavens, I was there, as in already there. I supplemented that there. Well, it says directly, direct quote is, when he established the heavens, I was there. And I was adding in the sense of meaning already. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree that the water should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, then I was by him, like a little child. And I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and my delights were with the sons of men. Now therefore, and I just want to mention something here before going on to the second part of this. Let me just turn to the very first verses in Torah. I have a brand new Tanakh that I'm very pleased with, the JPS edition, with the Hebrew and the English. It says, chapter 1, verse 1, when God began to create heaven and earth, the earth being unformed and void, with darkness over the surface of the deep, and a wind from God sweeping over the water. Okay? Now, it begins with Bereshit, Bara, and it goes on. So what it's saying is in the beginning. So what we're talking about here is Chokhmah, not Keter. We're talking about Chokhmah. And again, what is Chokhmah? It's with it's wisdom. So it's beginning with wisdom, which means that God began with wisdom to create heaven and earth. That means that God began with the Torah. And that's what we just read in Proverbs 8, verses 22 through 31. And it's listing off all of the things that existed, that wisdom existed before. And that corresponds to Genesis 1:1. With the beginning, with the Torah, is another way of reading that, the primordial Torah, God created heaven and earth. So I just wanted to point that out to you. It's very important that you see where I'm getting these things that I'm teaching, so that you don't think that these are my opinions or something that I came up with out of thin air. This is from Torah itself, the Book of Instruction. Okay, so continuing on with Proverbs, now 8:32 through 36, when it talks about what the purpose of Torah was, why Torah was made by God, and what its purpose is, as a mystical book. And now I will read those verses. Proverbs 8:31. Excuse me, 8:32. Now therefore listen to me, O you children. This is B'nai, this is us. For happy are they who keep my ways. Hear instruction, and be wise, and refuse it not. Happy is the man who hears me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoever finds me finds life, and shall obtain favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. All those who hate me love death. Well, there are some really important gems hidden in those verses. But just think about some of this here. It says, now therefore listen to me. Torah is a living being. Torah is not a musty old book written in ink on parchment. It's much more than that. That is just the writing down by man. The parchment with ink is just the writing down by man of the voice. Of the voice of the daughter of HaKol. The voice of the daughter. The voice of the all. The voice of God. It's a feminine voice. This is why we call the voice of the daughter. It's wisdom. It's Shekinah. It's Kavod, God's glory. It's Ruach HaKodesh. It's the Holy Spirit, the Holy Breath, that it says in Genesis 1:1 that God's wind hovered over the deep. It's the voice of God. And so it's saying here, now, therefore, listen to me, the voice of God, O you children, for happy are they who keep my ways. The ways of God. Hear instruction and be wise and refuse it not. For happy is the man who hears me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoever finds me finds life and shall obtain favor from the Lord. The life that one finds when one finds the wisdom of Torah is the life of the next world, and shall obtain favor from the Lord. Okay, so that means everlasting life. But in this life, in this physical life that we have in the material world of phenomena here, we shall obtain favor from the Lord as well. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. Now, how can a person who sins against God wrong his own soul? Well, where does one's soul come from? Your soul comes from God, and it's a piece of God. It's the only thing divine that's in you. It's the divine spark that animates you. It's the nefesh. It's the ruach. It's the neshama. It's the kaya. These are all the levels of soul that are in you. And if you sin against God, you're sinning against your own soul, because your own soul is God within you. God within you. God come into the world, into the physical world. It's the spark of God that is in you. That is what your soul is. Take away the soul, the body returns to the dust of the earth. When you die, your body dies. Your soul doesn't die. Your soul's immortal. It's divine. It comes from God. And it returns to God. So when you sin against Torah, which are the instructions of God, and not only the instructions, but beyond this, actually the Shekinah, wisdom, Sophia in Greek, the feminine aspect of God's wisdom, when you sin against this divine personality, this divine aspect of God, you're sinning against that same aspect that resides in your heart, in your soul. Therefore, you're sinning against your own soul. And what you're going to reap from that is pain, misery, emptiness, lack of purpose, depression, and ultimately even death. And then it says, all those who hate me love death. All those who hate me love death. It's the combination of two opposites, hate and love. Those who love the Torah love life and have eternal life, everlasting. Those who hate the Torah and sin against God sin against their own souls, and they love death in the sense that they unify with death. They reap or harvest death. All right. Now, we've mentioned how ancient the Torah is. Well, if you look at what we just read, we see that the Torah pre-existed the creation of the world. We showed that both in Proverbs chapter 8 through 36, and chapter 8, verses 22 through 30, and also in Genesis 1:1. So we see that it preceded the creation of the world. But we are also taught through Kabbalah and through the ancient Mishnaic, Amorim, the rabbinic sages who wrote the Midrashim and wrote down the Mishnah, we're given some numbers, okay? Not just that it pre-existed the world, but by how much. In one place, I don't have the source for this, but it's very commonly taught, and I'll find it, especially if someone emails me about this. I'll get back to you with it. We are taught that Torah existed 2,000 years prior to the creation of the world. 2,000 years prior to the creation of the world. And I'm sure that that number has some mystical significance. But in the Midrashic commentary to Bereshit Rabbah 1:7, we are also taught that it existed in God's mind 1,000 generations before he used the letters to create the world. So Torah existed in God's mind 1,000 generations before he used the letters to create the world. Now, that's considerably longer than 2,000 years, unless you consider that those 2,000 years are God years, not mankind years. 1,000 generations in terms of mankind years would be 20,000 years. And it just happens to be that 20,000 years in mankind's terms is equal to 2,000 years in God's years, because each of God's years is equivalent to 1,000 years of mankind. And 20 is the number of years between, generally taken to be between the years of generation, between the length of each generation. So 1,000 generations would be 20,000 years, which would be in man's reckoning, terms of solar years in this physical world and universe, which is equivalent to 2,000 years in God's world. So there's no conflict in these two teachings. So the 2,000 years we're taught about are 2,000 of God's years before the creation of the world, which is equivalent to 1,000 generations of mankind, which is equivalent to 20,000 solar years. That means that the Torah pre-existed the world by 20,000 of our years. Okay, second thing I want to talk about that comes out of these passages is Torah literally means, in Hebrew, means in English, instruction. And we see in the passage from Proverbs that I just read to you, specifically Proverbs chapter 8, verses 31 through 36, that Torah is used to mean instruction. And it's used by both God first and then man later. God uses the Torah's instructions as a blueprint from which to create the universe. We're taught in Bereshit Rabbah 1 that God looked into the Torah and created the world. And in another Mishnah regarding Jeremiah, or Midrash regarding Jeremiah, I need to look for the source of this, we're taught, were it not for my covenant, meaning Torah, which is to be studied day and night, I would not have established the statutes of heaven and earth. So God used the Torah as his blueprint. And where else do we find this? Just hold on a second, because this is real important, and I want to show you where else we find this. It's also in Proverbs, and let me just see if I can call that up real quickly here. It's in chapter 9 of Proverbs. Let's see if we can get this up. It shouldn't take too long here. I have a copy of the Judaic Classics on CD-ROM, and so I need Scriptures, Proverbs, I need chapter 9, get down to chapter 9, let's see if I can find this here. I don't want to take too much of your time, please be patient here. It's in 7. It's the passage that speaks of being at the side of the master craftsman. Well, I'm not going to find it. I don't want to take up any more of your time, but take my word for it. There's a passage in Proverbs that speaks about wisdom being at the side of the Lord in his capacity as master craftsman, in which he made the world, in which he hewed the world out of stone and made the heavens. Let's see. Well, and anyway, it doesn't matter. So anyway, God used the Torah as a blueprint from which to make the world, the universe. And man is also to study it, the Torah, to study it day and night, as we just read in Proverbs 8:33. Hear instruction and be wise and refuse it not. Happy is the man who hears me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. This is the covenant between God and man. This is the covenant that God gave to the Israelites. He offered it to all the other nations of the world, and they all refused it. It was only the Israelites who accepted it. But they accepted it not for their own benefit alone, but in order to keep it, preserve it, and then give it later on to all of the nations of the world, to give it to the entire universe. Okay, and then the other thing I want to say about Torah is I've had people tell me, well, the Torah is not mystical. What it is, it's the laws that we're supposed to live by, and it's a history. It's a history of the Jewish people, starting with the patriarchs and going up to through the era of the kings and the two kingdoms of Israel and Judah and the captivities and the building and destruction of the temples and that's it. That's the Torah. Well, no, that's not the Torah. And I want to read to you a passage from the Zohar, section 3, page 152a. And here's what it says about those people who think that it's nothing but stories, allegories, ethics, and laws, mitzvot. Quote, woe to the human being who says that Torah presents mere stories and ordinary words. All the words of Torah are sublime words, sublime secrets. There is in Torah a garment and body and soul of soul. The heavens and their hosts are the garment. The communion of Israel is the body. Zer Anpin is the soul, and the soul of soul is Arik Anpin. And I'll explain these terms in just a second. Woe to the wicked who say the Torah is merely a story. They look at this garment and no further. Happy are the righteous who look at Torah properly. As wine must sit in a jar, so Torah must sit in this garment. So look only at what is under the garment. So here we have it. We have the oral Torah handed down to us from God through Elijah, the prophet Elijah, to Shimon ben Yochai, and then kept hidden for over 1,000 years until it is written down for the first time by Moses. And my mind just goes blank. But anyway, the great Spanish Kabbalist in 1295 wrote this down in what is known as the Zohar, the Book of Radiance. And it says here, and I will discuss some of this as I go through it, woe to the human being who says that Torah, meaning the first five books of, or actually the entire Old Testament, presents mere stories and ordinary words. All the words of Torah are sublime words, sublime secrets. Sublime means that they're not obvious. All of the laws are obvious. They're printed there. They say, do this, don't do that. You've got 613 mitzvot. Some of them positive and some of them negative. They aren't sublime. They're obvious. But words that are sublime are esoteric, hidden. The meanings are hidden, hard to figure out. And then it goes on. It says, there is in the Torah a garment and a body and a soul of souls. Now, this is using an anthropomorphic metaphor here. Okay? It's comparing it to the human body. And the human body has a garment. We wear clothes, right? And beneath our clothes, our garments, are our physical body. But within our physical body resides our soul. And within our soul resides our soul of souls. This is the part that is God that I was talking about earlier. When it says in Proverbs chapter 8, 35, it says, "For whoever finds me," meaning the soul of soul, "finds life and shall obtain favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me," meaning the soul of the soul, "wrongs his own soul, and all those who hate me love death." So that's what this is a reference to here, is the soul of the soul. That's the part of God that's in each one of us, within our souls. So this passage of the Zohar says that the Torah is just like the human being, which is clothed with a garment. It has a body. Inside the body is a soul, and inside the soul is a soul of soul. And here's what it says, how they're the same. "The heavens and their host," so this is the heavens and their angels, "are the garment." Those are the outer things. All of the physical things. All of the physical world. Okay? Is the garment of Torah. The communion, Klal Yisrael, of Israel, is the body. So this means that the body of Israel, the community of Israel, is clothed with the world, is surrounded by the world, and wears the world as a garment. So this world is just a garment that wears out and passes away. Okay? Zeranpin. Okay, Zeranpin is a name, another name, known as a partsuf, okay, which is a name of a personality of God, for Sephirah Tiferet, meaning the smaller face. Zeranpin means smaller or lesser face. That's the soul, okay, and it includes all seven, including itself, seven of the ten Sephirot that are below Keter, the world of Atzilut, which consists of Keter, Hakma, and Bana. Okay, and then it says that, and so this is the soul. This is what the soul, all of those seven Sephirot are the soul of the communion of Israel. Okay, this is the people of Israel. Okay, and then the soul of that soul itself is a Rik Anpin, which is the three above it, known as a Rik Anpin, which is the world of Atzilut. It's specifically the Sephirah Keter, which is Rikonpin means larger face or long suffering one, long suffering face, and but it is generally taken to be those three together, acting together, from which the world comes into existence. So we have a larger and a smaller, a macro and a micro. All right, I'm gonna check my time here. And we have gone on long enough for today. So this will conclude today's teaching. And we will be repeating this teaching by playing rebroadcasting it by playing the recording of it that I've made while I was teaching. And it will be tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific time. You're welcome to come, of course, and I hope you do, and bring your friends. And our next live teaching will be at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific time on this coming Wednesday in the same location. Until that time, I hope and pray that you will go from strength to strength and be well. Zeigesund.